The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Our next guest has had a colourful past in business. He started out as a travelling salesman, worked for pharmaceutical companies, and went on to set up his own company, Pamex, in Mayo. They're currently in talks with Amazon about distribution of one of their products in the US. Tom Murphy, you started as a travelling salesman. Who did you start with?
I got my first job on the road selling knitting wool. My mother had a knitting wool shop called the Wool Boutique. So I grew up in that environment where we were all involved working in the shop, and my mother at one stage had approximately 100 knitters throughout Ireland, and they would knit Aran sweaters for her. And what would happen was, in those days, the tourist buses used to pull up outside our house. All the American tourists would come into the shop, and I always remember they were so tall, some of them had to duck to get in under the door.
You're going to tell me now they look better fed than the locals as well, are you?
Certainly did, because I remember some of the sizes of the, I say most of the sizes were what we would call XL nowadays, you know.
Was it a good business, Tom? Did your mum make a good living out of it?
It provided the cash flow, I suppose. That was the main thing. Like, and we had five boys in the house, so it helped. Simple as that. And she kept that going until the early mid-1970s. And what happened was that gave me the grow, so to speak, for knitting wool and all about wool. So a job came up and I applied for it, selling knitting wool throughout Ireland. And I travelled the length and breadth of Ireland in my Ford Escort Estate, my first company car.
A company car, Tom. So you were off to a very auspicious start.
Listen, I had the dream job, Richard. I used to do approximately 1,000 miles a week in those days.
Did it ever let you down, Tom? No.
The car?
The car, yeah.
It did. It certainly did. And I remember I had to park it and make sure that I knew exactly what way I would park the car, because it used to let rain in on the driver's door. And I remember coming out one morning and I'd kind of parked the car late at night, came out in the morning and the water was into my shoes. And so those are the kind of things that we used to have to cope with in those days.
That was the glamour side of it. But a thousand miles a week, particularly in those days, in terms of roads and no bypasses and villages and towns and everything, were you away from home a lot with that? You must have been. Was that a bit lonely?
You didn't think of it. Sometimes it was. And it's one area, one aspect of the business at the time that people used to talk about. I would leave home early on a Monday morning and I wouldn't be back until Friday. That happened on a regular basis. That was the university of life, and that to me gave me a wonderful, wonderful grounding in business.
So you moved on from wool and you moved into a totally different industry. How did that come about?
A friend of mine was a medical rep, and I said, yeah, I'd like to get into that business. And with my dad working in the pharmacy downtown, I always had an interest. And there was a pharmacist in Castlebar at the time, Jack Staunton, who's passed away many years ago. And he gave me a call one day and he said there was a job coming up with a company called Syntex Pharmaceuticals. Luckily enough for me, I got the job and it was a wonderful, wonderful company to work for.
You went on then to become general manager in Ireland, and something happened that was a bit of a shock, really, I suspect.
Yes, I got a phone call in 1994. I remember it was Easter holidays. A contact of mine phoned me to say, did I see Sky News that Syntex Pharmaceuticals was taken over by Roche Pharmaceuticals? And it was the first time ever that a European pharmaceutical company had made an offer to buy out an American company. Normally, it was the other way around. And in all the toing and froing, at the end of 1994, my position was made redundant. That was finalised on Christmas Eve, and I was on the dole after 20 years, 10 years of which I was manager of the Syntex operation in Ireland.
So they told you on Christmas Eve that you were gone?
They told me just before Christmas Eve, and they finalised all my redundancy package in that on Christmas Eve.
That was pretty rough.
It was pretty rough. I think I will probably never forget it. I was 40 years of age. I had four children, a wife and four children, and I did not know what 1995 or thereafter would entail.
And how did you take that? That's a very worrying situation, wife and young children. Was it something that got you down? Did you think that you might look for another job? Did you know what to do? How did you respond to it?
Well, I decided that, look, I wasn't going to let it get me down. And I worked hard at being positive. And I'm blessed in the fact that I am an eternal optimist. And even though you tell people, oh God, you know, you must be positive and be positive, be positive. Sometimes that's easier said than done. And I recognize that too, because you have to work at being positive. And sometimes it can be very difficult. But you go through, as somebody explained to me before, a kind of a, he described it as the Sarah principle. And Sarah stands for shock, anger, resentment, acceptance, and hope. It's like a little tunnel that you have to go through with the shock, the anger, the resentment. And then, you know, you have the acceptance, and then you have the light at the end of the tunnel, the hope. A bit like COVID-19 at the moment, where we're all going through that.
Yeah, very much so.
We're getting the acceptance and the hope.
During that period then, at some point, you got the idea of setting up your own business, going out on your own.
First of all, I sent out 62 job applications and CVs, or filled out 62 job applications and CVs. I got one acknowledgement of that 62, and I got one offer from a company who offered me a job, and they actually, it was a job that I didn't take. It didn't quite suit what I was doing. But I learned a big lesson from that, Richard, in the fact that anybody who applies to Pamex for a job now will always get an acknowledgement. They mightn't get the job, they might not get an interview even, right? But we will always acknowledge if they write to us. Because I have great respect for people who go to the trouble of writing to a company, even cold calling, saying, look, I'm in this predicament at the moment. I'm looking for a job. I have these qualifications. I can do X, Y, and Z, and I'd love to work for you. Because I think that takes courage. That takes guts for people to get up off their backside and look for a job.
So during that period, you came up with the idea of setting up your own business. Did you get help with that? One of the issues people often face is coming up with an idea, making it happen and raising the money.
I met a very, very helpful guy from Ballina, and he was in charge of the social welfare office in Castlebar, a chap called John Kelly. And he was very, very helpful because there was a new scheme coming on board from the Department of Social Welfare that if you decided to set up your own business, in the first year, you could hold on to your social welfare money. And the second year, you got 75%. The third year, you got 50%. And the fourth year, you got 25%. So it meant that it reduced the risk. At least you had some money coming in, some income coming in to put bread on the table. I was the first person in Mayo to avail of that scheme. Mary and I decided that what we would do is look for any of the products that, as I call it, fall off the back of the lorry for pharmaceutical companies. Any ones where the products don't get the attention now because newer products had come on board in that. And we thought that we could bring some life into those products. And that's exactly what we did.
So the Pamex business had gone very well for you. And along the way, you came across a shaving oil product that was to become de facto. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, I was getting my hair cut, actually, which is a kind of a distant memory now in today's days. But I was getting my hair cut with a barber friend of mine called Ger Staunton. And he picked up this little bottle and he said, Tom, you have great difficulty shaving. I said, I know I have. Yeah, it's a curse, the bane of my life. And he said, you should try this bottle. And to be quite honest with you, Ger Staunton probably has the most famous beard in Castlebar. So he hadn't shaved for years. So I told him in not very parliamentary language exactly where and how far he could stick his little bottle, because I did not believe that that bottle would be worth anything. But I took it home, and after about 3 weeks, my good wife Mary said to me, are you going to use that bottle or will I throw it out? So I started to use it. I followed the instructions, and within about 10 days, my skin changed dramatically. And I know all about that because I was that soldier. When I would shave, it'd be like coming out of the boxing ring after 10 rounds with Mike Tyson. I'd be cuts and blood all over the place. So I tried it. I had no cuts. And I said, I'm going to make a business out of this. So I rang the company in the United States. I spoke to the guy, Bill Hamilton. I went over and visited him in Illinois. And I came back with the rights to the product for the world, except the United States market.
And did that cost you a lot of money?
It cost me the fare over to the States and back. And it did very, very well for us. And then we had a problem with it, that the product was coming from the United States over to Ireland, which was very, very costly. So we decided that we would make our own formulation, try and improve on what we had. And we did that. And that product is called De Facto.
The name De Facto, how did you come up with that? It's a good name.
It's a good name. Thank you very much. Yeah. We were wondering how to do it. And we had employed an agency in Dublin to help us get the name. And we went through approximately, I'd say, 75 to 80 names. And each time there would be a problem from a legal viewpoint. You have to make sure that you can defend the trademark. We tried, for instance, Murphy's Miracle Oil, Murphy's Shaving Oil and that. And with regard to that, you see, there's a company in the States, Jack Murphy. They do outdoor clothing and things like that. And the advice we were given was that they could actually object because they have a range of products already on the market with the name Murphy on it. A very complicated business. And I was sitting here reading the local paper, the Mayo News, sitting here in the kitchen. And there's a guy, a journalist from Westport, Leamy McNally, and he writes a column on that called De Facto. And I said, that's it. That's De Facto. That's the name.
Leamy hadn't got it, no. If he ever goes into the shaving business.
Who?
If the journalist Leamy goes into the shaving business, he might say you took his name, De Facto.
No, we had a good joke over it indeed. And because of the fact that he was the inspiration of the name, we actually made a donation on his behalf to a local charity here.
I thought you were going to say you gave him a load of free shaving oil.
We can do that to him for him too, no problem.
Well, Tom Murphy, founder of Pamex and also of De Facto Shaving Oil, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you very much, Richard. My pleasure.